something in the nusach of the that we say in Bimei Matis Yo that frustrates me every year. Talk about the whole mess of the Melchama. Rabin biyad ma'atim, tmeyim biyad tahirim, rishon biyad tzadikim, zeitim biyad oiske sarasecha. And then we say afterwards, v'acher came bo'ov anechol et v'ir beisecha, and afterwards your sons came to your beis hamikdash, ufinu es heichalecha, and they cleaned out the heichal, v'tiyaru es mikdashecha, v'hidliku neirois v'chatzris kachecha. And they lit neirois in the chatzir. Now this lighting neiros, l'chayr, and a lot of them of course will learn this way, that's the ness of the menorah, they're familiar. They lit neiros. The famous ness of the menorah that stayed lit for 8 days, v'hidliku neiros, v'chatzris kachecha. But if you were rereading the Bimei Matis Yo, you wouldn't think there was any ness involved in that at all. I mean, one of the main things in Hanukkah, one of the focuses of Hanukkah, is that the menorah was lit for 8 days. And you read what we say three times a day in Moedim, Ben Tahar Hanukkah, and in Alanisim, in Benching. And v'hidliku neiros v'chazvet, they lit neiros. Sounds like they lit neiros. Why doesn't it say that the neiros stayed lit for 8 days? Isn't that a very, very important part of what happened? Now there is a medrash called Psikta Rabsi, the Iyun Tefillah here, and the Siddur Eitzra Tefillah brings it, that when he brings the Ness of the Menorah, he doesn't say that there was a Ness that was lit for 8 days. He says here, Lama Madlika Neiros B'chanukah, it's Psikta Rabsi Perek Beis. Why do we light, and I looked it up, why do we light Neiros on Chanukah? He says, Elo B'shah She'natzchu Banav Shel Chashmonaika Ingada L'malchus Yavan. At the time that the Chashmonaim conquered the king of Yavon, the kingdom of Yavon, nichnasu lebeis hamikdash, they came into the beis hamikdash, umasu shom zayin shpudim shel barzel, they found 7 poles of iron. The Gemara says it was wood, but the Medrash seems to say it was iron. The kavu aysam, and they established them, I guess that means they made a menorah out of them. The hidliku neiros b'saicham, and they were madlik neiros. So the Psikta Rabsi just says, we light Neiros on Chanukah, because when they came into the Beis HaMikdash, they found the wherewithal to be able to light Neiros, and they lit Neiros. And he brings it, the Iyun Tefillah brings it on this Haidah that we say, so it almost sounded like he was trying to say that, according to that, it makes sense. They lit Neiros. It doesn't say anything about a Ness. But still, it's very, very, very difficult to say that our Nusach HaTfilah that we say doesn't recognize that there was a Ness that the menorah was lit for 8 days. In addition, I found that the Chassam Sofer, when he brings the Psikta, I don't know why the Psikta left out the Ness, but the Chassam Sofer assumes that, of course, the Psikta is also made that there was a Ness that it lit for 8 days. That's for sure. So that doesn't seem to be such a good answer. So I want to try to discover another answer. There's another interesting thing that we find in the Tefillahs of Chanukah. We all know that Chanukah is 8 days. There are a lot of dinim of Chanukah. One of them is that Chanukah is for 8 days. In every place in davening that we mention Chanukah, we make sure to mention that it's 8 days. I'm curious why. V'kavu shmoinas yimei Chanukah eilu. Could have said v'kavu yimei Chanukah eilu. Saying this is not the place to go to start learning Hilchas Chanukah. We assume that by this point you already know that Chanukah is 8 days. V'kavu yimei Chanukah eilu. It's eight days. You don't, you know, on Pesach and on Sukkot, you don't find so often that we say shivas yimei Pesach eilu, shmoinas yimei Sukkot eilu. Pesach is Pesach. It lasts for 7 days. Sukkot is Sukkot. It lasts for 8 days. Chanukah is Chanukah. It also happens to last for 8 days. But the Nusach HaTfilah is V'kavu Shmoinas Yimei Chanukah Eilu. And Neiros Halalu also. And Neiros Halalu we say V'chol Shmoinas Yimei Chanukah and Neiros Halalu. For all 8 days, these Neiros are Kodesh. Yeah, I guess it's for all 8 days. Well, you could have just said Haneiros halalu kodesh. We're v'chol yimei Chanukah. Haneiros halalu kodesh. All the days of Chanukah, the neiros are kodesh. What's v'chol shmoin? And all 8 days of Chanukah, the neiros are kodesh. And in Yevan and Nikbetzu Alai that we sing after we light the neiros, we find that also. And I'm pretty convinced it wasn't just so that it should rhyme. From the extra, from what was left over, they found a little jar from the jars that were left over. And this happened. B'nei Bina, these Chachamim, Yimei Shmoina, 8 days, Kavu Shira Renanim, they made Chanukah. They made Chanukah for 8 days. I guess the only thing that rhymed with Bina was Shmoina. Is that B'nei Bina, Yimei Shmoina? Is that the reason why we have to say that it's 8 days? The Gemara says in Brachas, someone who's mevarech l'chaydesh v'zmana, someone who says kiddush levana at the right time, is ki ilu mekabel pnei shchina. Someone who says the berachas halavana at the right time, it's as if he's receiving the Rabbeinu Shalala. It's as if he comes in front of Hashem. Why is Birchas Levana like Makabel Pnei Shechina? So Rabbeinu Yaina on Brachas says like this. He said that there's a pasuk. He says a beautiful taich in a pasuk. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says, Ochein ato kel mistater. It's true. Ochein means it's true that you are a hidden God. Elokei Yisrael Moshiach. The God of Klal Yisrael saves. What's the connection between those two parts? So Rabbeinu Yaina says, it's true that you're a hidden God. We don't see Hashem. But through Hashem's actions, we see Him. When you're Moshiach Yisrael, then we see you. That's how we see you. So, Achein Ata Kel Mestata, you are a hidden Hashem. But Elikei Yisrael Moshiach, we spot you, Hashem. You're visible when you save Klal Yisrael. So Rabbeinu Yaina says that when a person says the Birchas HaLevana, he sees the new moon. And he notices the new moon, and he says the bracha of Birchas HaLevana on that moon. He's noticing Hashem in the Bria. He's noticing Hashem in the world, in creation. And when he notices Hashem in creation, even though Hashem is usually hidden, but he notices Hashem, so it's ki'ilu mekabel pnei shchina. That closeness of like, that's Hashem, not that the moon is Hashem, chalila, but that from this miracle that the moon rejuvenated itself, that we have a new moon, I notice Hashem in the Bria. And the truth is that there's many, many miracles in the world. A person just has to look at his hands and his feet. A person just has to breathe, see. There's many, many miracles. And all of them, a person could say that when he focuses on them, it's ki'ilu mekabel pnei shchina. We see Hashem through the miracles that he does. But the Gemara doesn't say anything else. The Gemara says specifically, when a person sees the moon, when a person sees the new moon, that's when it's ki'ilu mekabel pnei shchina. That's when it's as if you're in front of Hashem. What is it about the new moon? So the answer, and I think something we could all recognize, the answer is an understanding. Why is it that every single day we're not overwhelmed from Hashem's nisim? How come when we go through life, we see we're surrounded, right now, this second, we're surrounded by endless nisim v'nefleis? The human eye, the human ear, the ability to breathe, the ability to eat, the laws of physics is just one miracle after the next. And we don't wake up every day awed and inspired and motivated and overwhelmed and just wishing we could be moided to Hashem for what He's done to us. It's not how we spend every day. Why not? So the reason is obvious. Because from the day we were born until today, we've been consistent and constant that these nisim happen. Since the day I was born, I've seen. Since the day I was born, I've heard. There's nothing new to it. Imagine if I would have never heard a song before. I've never heard before. And suddenly my ears were opened up today, and someone played me a beautiful symphony. I would be nisragish. Of course I would be nisragish. I would thank Hashem that there's such a thing called music. For that nest called music. If I had never seen before, and Hashem would open my eyes, I would have so much to thank Him for. And I would know that it's Hashem. But I'm used to it. Harigo. Habit. We're used to it. Hashem surrounds us with nisim, but they're nisim that we're used to. Someone was telling me last week that it's one of the Bachrim here saw a snowstorm for the first time in his life when the snow fell over here. I was just imagining what it would be like. I saw a snowstorm for the first time probably before I was a year old. I'm used to it. It's a wonder that it's not incredible, the first snowstorm. After a while, we get not so enamored by it. But the first one of the season is the first one of the season is exciting, at least until we have to get to work. And I was just thinking to myself, imagine this boy, he's 20 years old, and he's seeing for the first time white stuff coming down from the sky, covering everything. It's amazing. Think that. It's amazing. Makabel Pnei Shechina. It's a nes. It's an incredible thing. It's absolutely incredible. You could form it into things. You could throw it. You could shape it. It's amazing. It's just an incredible thing. It just falls out of the sky. It's absolutely incredible. The moon is one thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the Bria that disappears, and then it comes again, at least in our perspective. It disappears, and then it comes into view again. That's a chance for us to realize that things are not constant. It's here now because it was here yesterday. It'll be here tomorrow because it was here today. Things aren't constant. There's newness, there's hischadshus in the Bria. It's just that we don't see it. Hashem renews the creation every moment. Every moment Hashem creates the trees and the animals and the people and the galaxies and everything. Hashem is recreating every moment. Hashem is willing it to exist. When the moon disappears and then we look in the sky and say, look, a new moon. Of course we know it's going to happen. It's also part of nature. Of course it's consistent. But it within nature, it's a little bit of an opportunity to see something new. Something new. Now, why the moon is different than other things that we see new, you could look in the Alter's letters, he explains the difference between the moon and other things. But let's just leave it like this for now. The moon, it's something new. It was gone. It disappeared. It wasn't in the sky. And so, look, something new, a moon. It's incredible. That realization, ke'ilu makam al p'nei shechina, we come in contact with Hashem.
It's interesting, the bracha, there's yitzer ha'ma'aris, like yatzah.
It's very interesting, that's right. Yaitzer means to continuously create, continuously form. He says over there, the Alter, when he talks about this bracha, he says, people think that the ki'ilu makabel p'nei shechina is by saying the bracha, we make a bracha, shebe ma'amari baruch shechakim v'ruach pivkol z'lachak z'man asad lahem, we say the whole bracha, and that's ki'ilu makabel p'nei shechina. He says, no, that's not ki'ilu makabel p'nei shechina. He says, the Mekabel Pnei Shechina, seeing Hashem, that's when we see the moon. We see the moon and we say, oh, there's a Rabbanu Shalom running the world. Nature is not just here because it was here yesterday. There's something new. We're so overwhelmed when we see Hashem that we have to make a bracha. The Virus HaLevana is on the Mekabel Pnei Shechina. It's not the Mekabel Pnei Shechina. We're so overwhelmed, we're so moved when we see something new in the world that we want to make a bracha. And that's the Virus HaLevana. One of the main things that the Yevanim tried to get, that the Greeks tried to get Klal Yisrael to stop, was observing Rosh Chodesh, observing the new moon. And we know that this is completely consistent with their hashkafa, with their philosophy, that they felt that nature is completely removed from a creator. Whether they believed in a creator or not is irrelevant, but nature is its own thing, Mother Nature, it's its own thing. And in their attempt to get Klal Yisrael to buy into this philosophy that nature is nature, they said, no more Rosh Chodesh, stop noticing the new moon. No more observing the hischachus of the Levana. We can't have that anymore. With that in mind, let's take a look at the Nes of Chanukah. They took a flask of oil that was supposed to last for only one day, and it lasted for 8 days. Now let me ask you, in reality, in truth, is there any more of a Nes when a flask of oil lasts for 8 days than when a flask of oil lasts for one day? Is it any more of a miracle? It's not any more of a miracle. It's just that we're used to, the miracle that we're used to is that a flask of oil could last for one day. That's the miracle that we're used to. The miracle that we're not used to is that the flask of oil could burn for 8 days. Is the quality of the miracle different? It's still an amazing thing that we put this liquid into an air and we light it, then it burns. Either way, it's an incredible nace. It's an incredible miracle. But this is something that we're used to. It was incorporated in the way Hashem consistently runs the world. And for 8 days, that we're not used to. That was a new thing. That was out of the realm of our Haragel. We weren't used to that. But whether oil is slow burning or quick burning, probably doesn't make that much of a difference to Hashem. So in reality, the Nes of Chanukah is not anymore. If there would have been a Nes that it burns for 1 day and it would have gone out after 1 day, or if it lasts for 1 day and it lasts for 8 days, it's the same Nes. Because oil burning is a Nes. And being that that's true, we understand the answer to the famous kasha we mentioned last week. The famous kasha of the Beis Yosef that asks why Chanukah is 8 days. He said the Beis Yosef asks Chanukah should only be for 7 days. Because the first day wasn't a miracle. The first day, that made sense that it should light. It was from day two through day eight. That was a miracle. Day one wasn't a miracle. You light oil, it lights. So there are many, many answers. There's a Sefer Ner Lameya that gives 100 answers to that question. But according to what we're saying, that's the whole point of Chanukah. The Greeks wanted us to believe that day one is not a miracle. The miracle of day two through day eight reminded us, not just that Hashem could make miracles, but that all of nature is a miracle. It's all a miracle. It would have been inconsistent with our victory over the Greeks to make a Yom Tov of Chanukah, and we would say, what about day one? No, that's not counted, that's just nature. That's Greek to do that. We can't disregard the day that's nature. That's a Greek idea. When we see Hashem made a nes, we say, what about day one? That's also a nes. Baruch Hashem, something broke the monotony of my daily life and broke it open for me, and I saw an unbelievable miracle, and it reminded me that we're surrounded by miracles. And that the fact that the flame grabs onto the wick and burns up the oil, that's a miracle. And day one is also a fantastic miracle. What a makabel pnei shchina that must have been. Seeing the shchina in the world through a miracle, a person looks around and he sees that the whole world is miracles. The Alter says that when we see the new moon, it's ki'ilu makabel pnei shchina, because the new moon is saif kol saif, part of nature. But when we look at the world that there is no nature, when we look at everything as a miracle, if we look at our hands and we move our fingers and we see that that's a nest that works, that my brain can send a signal instantaneously to my hands to clench a fist and it can hold that fist, that's a miracle. There are people who can't do that. That's a miracle. Then that's makabel pnei shchina, that's living with Hashem, that's seeing Hashem all over. I think that's the reason that we keep mentioning in the tefillahs, the Chanukah is 8 days. V'kavu shmoinas yimei Chanukah elu. Because the whole definition, the whole testament to what the Chashmonaim wanted to teach us over here, Chanukah is 8 days, they keep reminding us. V'kavu shmoinas yimei Chanukah elu. They were kaveya, these 8 days of Chanukah, what was the, in the... V'chol shmoinas yimei Chanukah haneres alogu. All 8 days, the neres hakodesh. Why do we say all 8 days, we asked? Let it just say all the days of Chanukah. Everybody knows Chanukah is 8 days. No, part of our song is that it's 8 days. That's part of the song. It's 8 days. I'm including day one over here. And most importantly, when we say, b'nei binu, minoisar kan kanim, from the leftover jars, nasa neis lashashanim, a miracle happened. B'nei bina means people of intelligence, yimei shmoina, 8 days. That's not just to rhyme. It took people of intelligence, b'nei bina, to people of intelligence, yimei shmoina, to make it 8 days. If we would have been there, we would have been yimei shiva, we would have said 7 days. But b'nei bina, the intelligent people, the chachamim, the mevinim davar mitoich davar, the people that understand what's going on, yimei shmoina, they made it 8 days. B'nei bina, yimei shmoina. I wonder if that's why the Nes was left out. We asked at the beginning, when it says, in the Bimei Matisyo, it says that they cleared out the Beis HaMikdash, and they lit Neiris in the Beis HaMikdash. And we don't say anything that a miracle happened. We just said they lit Neiris in the Beis HaMikdash. Why don't we say, and a great miracle happened, it stayed lit for 8 days. Maybe Chazal are sending us a message by their omission. Sometimes Chazal teach us something by what they say, sometimes Chazal teach us something by what they don't say. Maybe Chazal are saying, you want to know why it doesn't say the Nes? It does say the Nes. It says they lit Neiris. That's a Nes. That's what Hanukkah is supposed to teach you. We're so amazed. The illegal Neiris, B'chassus B'shechel, that's not out of the ordinary. Yes, it is out of the ordinary, because lighting Neiris is out of the ordinary. Because the beauty of being able to light a Ner in the Beis HaMikdash, that's out of the ordinary. For us to spell it, oh, and a miracle happened, would almost make it sound like if a miracle hadn't happened, there wouldn't be anything incredible. But a miracle happened. No, the miracle was just a hechatimtzi, a way to wake us up. Once we're woken up, we could light, like we talked about last week, we light our menorah and it burns out a half hour later. That's also a miracle. And it's the same miracle. It's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Misha Omar, borrowing the terms of a Gemara, the Alta says, Misha Omar L'Shemen, V'yadlik Yoyim Echad, Yoyim Ar L'Shemen, V'yadlik Shmayna Yamin. The one who tells oil to light for one day, he's the same one who tells oil to light for 8 days. It's the same Hashem. This is very, very important biurim in the tefillah that come out from this, that the altar says. With this understanding that the Nes of Chanukah is not just about appreciating that a Nes happened then, but it's really to open our eyes to see that we're surrounded by miracles. We understand Pashat, simple readings in the tefillahs that I never understood. Ula'amcha Yisrael, and to your nation Yisrael, Osisa Teshua Gedayel, you did a tremendous saving, Upurkan, and also a Yeshua. Like today. I don't know of any saving today. And don't forget, Klal Yisrael said this in the middle of the Holocaust, the middle of the Inquisition. They said this many times that they could have used a little saving. What does it mean? You did a miracle, you saved Klal Yisrael just like today. What's today? That's the Nes of Chanukah, that's the point. The point is that the Nes of Chanukah is supposed to teach us that when the miracle happened that Hashem saved us, it's just like today that we're full of miracles, that our very existence is a miracle, that the fact that we live from one day to the next is a miracle. Just like today, that's exactly the lesson of Chanukah. Then when the HaKadosh Baruch Hu did great Nisim, just like today He does Nisim. And that's also the Pshat and the Bracha that we make every single day when we light the Menorah. She'asa Nisim L'Avoseinu, who did miracles for our ancestors, by Yamim Ohem in those days, Bazman Hazeh, at this time. So you could say that means Bazman Hazeh means at this time in the calendar. By Yamim, those days, at this time of the year. But it seems a little, and that also we need to put into the bracha, what the date is. So the altar from Kelm says this. The altar from Kelm says that by Yomim Ohem, Bazman Hazeh means these days. Hashem did miracles for our fathers in those days, and in these days. What miracle? I didn't see any miracles. That's the lesson of Chanukah. You do see miracles. If you see, that's a miracle. If you hear, that's a miracle. If you can see the lights of the menorah, that's a miracle. If you can look at the faces of your children, that's a miracle. We're surrounded by miracles. By Yomim Ohem in those days, and that wakes us up to realize, Bazman Hazeh, today. I want to take this two steps further and make a suggestion, some I think interesting suggestions in some of them before. This famous question of the Beis Yosef that asks why Chanukah is 3 days and not seven, the Beis Yosef himself, Rabbi Yosef Karo himself, suggests two answers. One of his answers is that no, a miracle happened every single day because they took the jar of oil and they divided it into 8 parts. Each part couldn't last as long as it was supposed to. And every day they put in enough oil to last just for a few minutes, which is not enough. And it lasted the whole night. So every day from day 1 through day 8, a miracle happened. Because since they had divided it up, and it was just a small amount for each day, so the fact that on day 1 it lasted all night instead of just a few minutes was a miracle. And the same thing on day 2 through day 8. So that's the Beis Yosef's reason why we have Chanukah for 8 days. So the Mefarshim ask a question on the Beis Yosef. The Mefarshim ask, that's a very nice answer. But who gave them a right to do that? Ein simchan al hanes. We have a rule, you're not allowed to rely on a miracle. We're not allowed to rely on miracles. That's why we have to get up and do what we have to do. We don't just sit back and wait for miracles to happen. That's not the way Hashem wants us to act in this world. We have to act in accordance with the nature of the world around us. And we have to do the best we can, our hishtadlus. So if you have a choice of lighting the neir of the menorah one night properly, or for 8 nights improperly, which is better? Obviously, do it one night right. So why did they take the flask of oil that could last for one night and divide it into 8 parts? Each one of those 8 parts is not valid. Just do it one night properly. That's the question I ask on the Beis Yosef. I wonder if the answer is according to this Yosef. Being that the whole threat of the Greeks was not to realize that nature is also the hand of Hashem, and being that in order to conquer the Greeks, we had to ingrain in ourselves that the nature is only the hand of Hashem, so we can imagine that those people that won the war against the Greeks, these were people on the Madrega of Reb Hanina ben Daisa, these were people who understood and had ingrained in them the reality, which is something very difficult, that there's no difference between nature and nace, between nature and a miracle. There's no difference. And they lived that. That's how they conquered the Yavanim. They lived that, that when it rains, it's Hashem sending drops of oil down, of water down. That when grass grows, it's Hashem poking the grass through the thing. That when anything happens, they saw it all as 100% as a nace. Now let me ask you, somebody who sees Teva 100% as a nace, can we say on him, Ein Seimchen al Anes, that you can't rely on a miracle? It's all a miracle. Life is one big miracle. So maybe for these people, the cloud, for us, that we have emunah that it's all miracles, but we don't live that reality, that it's all a miracle. For us, we have a cloud, Ein Seimchen al Anes. But if someone could reach the Madrega, like Reb Hanina ben Daisa said, Misha'amar l'shemen she'yadlaku yoyma l'chayim etzvi yadlik. If we could reach the Madrega, that I'm not any more impressed with oil that lasts 5 minutes or oil that lasts 5 hours. It's not any more impressive to me. Both ways are what Hashem wants. And when I light the oil, I don't know what's going to happen. If Hashem wants, it'll last for 5 minutes. If Hashem wants, it'll last for 5 hours. It could be for them, the klal, possibly, to answer the Beis Yosef's kasha, the klal of Ein Seimchen al Anes doesn't apply. Because for them, the whole world is an ace. That's one ha'ara based on this idea. Another ha'ara, very similar, based on this idea. Rav Huttner has a kash in the very end of the Sefer Pachad Yitzchak. There's two things, rishimas, two things that he wrote, notes that he wrote to himself. And in there he has a long piece, but I'm just going to pull out a little part of it. And he asks the following question. He says, what would happen if I would light a Shabbos candle? And I would light it in my backyard, in a place that it could start a fire. And on Wednesday afternoon, for some crazy reason, the candle is still lit. And we know Shabbos candles go out in 2 or 3 hours. But for some reason, Wednesday afternoon, that candle is still lit, and it ignites something. It travels across the fire travels across my backyard, into my neighbor's backyard, and burns his backyard. Am I liable for that? He says, clearly, if you look at Shulchan Aruch, you see that you're not liable for that. A fire that shouldn't really exist, naturally, you can't blame me for if it burned. As far as I'm concerned, it's out. It doesn't exist anymore. That's not my fire anymore. That's some kind of miraculous fire. That's not me. See, he says, if so, when they lit the menorah and it lasted for 8 days, so day one, they lit. Day two, is that their lighting? That's miracle light. That's not them. Are they Mekayim the mitzvah of lighting the menorah for day two? It says, according to this Yisrael, if you look at Chayshon Mishpat, you'll see that's not Eshay anymore. It's not his fire. It should have gone out. The extent of my action is over. Now I shoot an arrow. It goes all the way across the room. It starts landing. And suddenly it goes up. It starts going the other direction. That's me? That's my arrow? That's not me. I don't know what that is, but it's not me. I'm not liable for that. And that's really what happened here. They shot an arrow. They lit a candle. After a day, it was supposed to go down. It went up again. That's not them. So why is it called that they lit the menorah? But again, according to what we're saying, it's not a kasha. Because we're dealing with people that they don't have this difference in their mind. Naturally, it should go out now. Oh, a miracle happened. To them, it's all completely in the hand of Hashem. To them, when they shoot the arrow, They see Hashem take the arrow and start bringing it across the room. That's what they see. Hashem carrying the arrow. If that's what they see, then it's not such a wonder if the arrow turns around and starts heading in the other direction. Either way, they're looking at the hand of Hashem. So the whole thing is their action. Hanukkah this week comes out right between the end of Parshas Vayeshev and the beginning of Parshas Miketz. And this end of Parshas Vayeshev and beginning of Parshas Miketz, we have a very similar concept. Yosef HaTzadik asked the Sarah Mashkim to please remember him to Paro. Please mention him to Paro. He wanted to get out of prison. And the Pasuk ends up, V'loi Zachar Sarah Mashkim etz Yosef. The Sarah Mashkim did not remember Yosef. Vayishkachei, when he forgot him. So Rashi says over there, the last Rashi in the parasha, Rashi says, why did he forget him? It was a punishment from Hashem. Yosef should not have relied on the Sarah Mashkim. He should have relied on Hashem. So everybody asks, all the generations, everybody asks, what do you mean he should have relied on Hashem? Is that the way we're supposed to live? We should put our feet up and rely on Hashem? Like someone was telling me yesterday, my house has no food in it. It's completely empty. I'll sit by my kitchen table, time for breakfast. And I say, okay, I'm not going to go do something myself. That wouldn't be me talking. I'm going to rely on Hashem. You can't. That's not the way Hashem wants us to live. We're supposed to do hishtadlus. We live in a world of nature, and within that world, we're supposed to try to put food on our table. What did Yosef do wrong? Shouldn't he try to get himself out of prison? Isn't that a natural thing to try to do? What did he do wrong? I want to suggest that he didn't do anything wrong. He thought wrong. The problem wasn't what he did. Of course he did the right thing. He just tried to get himself out of prison. The problem was that he thought to himself, oh, maybe that will work. Maybe that will work. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the show. You have an obligation to do whatever little effort you can. But what's going to work? What's going to work is what Hashem wants. That's what's going to work. The Lashon of Rashi is, B'pnei she'tala bo Yosef l'zichroi. Yosef relied on him. Don't rely on a person. Of course you have to do what you have to do. Of course you have to try. But don't rely on a person. Don't say, oh, maybe that will work. No. You finish sending him out, take out your Tehillim and talk to Hashem. Yosef should have been conscious of this idea. There is no nature. It's all in the hands of Hashem. Completely. And whether the Sarah Mashkim remembers or doesn't, I'm equally likely of getting out of prison. Because it depends on what Hashem wants. So why am I mentioning it to the Sarah Mashkim? Because that's what I have to do. I have to do Ishtadlus. To depend on the Sarah Mashkin, that was his Aveira. It wasn't what he did, it was how he thought. This is something that's a tremendous lesson, a simple and important lesson. We have 8 nights of Hanukkah, a simple and important lesson. The Alter has a few shtiklach on this, that's why I'm talking about it. And he says, imagine, you know, the famous string that you ask someone to tie around his finger so that he'll remember to get something for you. So imagine, I'll ask Chaim, please tie a string around your finger so that when you go to Stav Shabbos, you should remember to get a dozen eggs. Please make sure the string doesn't fall off your finger. So Chaim comes back to me and he says, I did exactly what you said. I made sure the string didn't fall off my finger. I said, okay, so did you get the eggs? Oh, no, I wasn't thinking about the eggs. You told me to make sure the string doesn't fall off my finger. I made sure. No, Chaim, I told you to make sure the string doesn't fall off your finger because I wanted it to remind you of something. If you're not going to remember what it's supposed to remind you of, that's meaningless. That's what the Alter says. Hashem tells us to light a menorah. He wants it to remind us of something. If we just light the menorah and it doesn't remind us of anything, so what was the point of lighting the menorah? He says, Oiva avoy l'nafshi, he bemoans his fate that he lit the menorah so many years and I didn't forget what the string is supposed to remind me of. He writes that himself. When we light the menorah, we're supposed to remember that everything Hashem does for us is a nes, and that we're surrounded by Nisan, and we're surrounded by the presence of Hashem. I couldn't resist bringing in this article that I have. It's a famous, famous article. I just want to read certain paragraphs from it. 3 Days to Sea, as published in Atlantic Monthly, January 1933, by Helen Keller. Helen Keller, as we know, was blind and deaf. I'm just going to pick out certain paragraphs. I think just to remind us of how much we have to thank Hashem on every little bit. The same lethargy, I am afraid, characterizes the use of all our facilities and senses. Only the deaf appreciate hearing. Only the blind realize the manifold blessings that lie in sight. Particularly does this observation apply to those who have lost sight and hearing in adult life. But those who have never suffered impairment of sight or hearing seldom make the fullest use of these blessed faculties. Their eyes and ears take in all sights and sounds hazily, without concentration and with little appreciation. It is the same old story of not being grateful for what we have until we lose it, of not being conscious of health until we are ill. Now and then I have tested my seeing friends to discover what they see. Recently I was visited by a very good friend who had just returned from a long walk in the woods, and I asked her what she had observed. "Nothing in particular," she replied. I might have been incredulous had I not been accustomed to such responses. For listen to these words. "For long ago I became convinced that the seeing see little." How is it possible, I asked myself, to walk for an hour through the woods and see nothing worthy of note? I, who cannot see, find hundreds of things to interest me through mere touch. I feel the delicate symmetry of a leaf. I pass my hands lovingly about the smooth skin of a silver birch or the rough, shaggy bark of a pine. In spring, I touch the branches of trees hopefully in search of a bud, the first sign of awakening nature after her winter sleep. I feel the delightful, velvety texture of a flower and discover its remarkable convolutions. And something of the miracle of nature is revealed to me. Occasionally, if I am very fortunate, I place my hand gently on a small tree and feel the happy quiver of a bird in full song. I am delighted to have the cool waters of a brook rush through my open fingers. To me, a lush carpet of pine needles or spongy grass is more welcome than the most luxurious Persian rug. To me, the pageant of seasons is a thrilling and unending drama, the action of which streams through my fingertips. At times, my heart cries out with longing to see all these things. If I can get so much pleasure from mere touch, how much more beauty must be revealed by sight? Yet those who have eyes apparently see little. The panorama of color and action which fills the world is taken for granted. It is human, perhaps, to appreciate little that which have and to long for that which we have not. But it is a great pity that in the world of light, the gift of sight is used only as a mere convenience rather than as a means of adding fullness to life. If I were the president of a university, I should establish a compulsory course in how to use your eyes. The professor would try to show his pupils, I don't think it pun intended, how they could add joy to their lives by really seeing what passes unnoticed before them. He would try to awake their dormant and sluggish faculties. I'm going to read another few paragraphs. I think it's important. Perhaps I can best illustrate by imagining what I should most like to see if I was given the use of my eyes, say, for just 3 days. And while I am imagining, suppose you too set your mind to work on the problem of how you would use your own eyes if you had only 3 days to see. If with the oncoming darkness of the third night you knew that the sun would never rise for you again, how would you spend those 3 intervening days? What would you most want to let your gaze rest on? And then she starts going through the different things she would want to see. I'm just going to skip around just to point out certain parts. I do not know what it is to see into the heart of a friend through that window of the soul, the eye. I can only see through my fingertips the outline of a face. I can detect laughter, sorrow, and many other obvious emotions. I know my friends from the feel of their faces, but I cannot really picture their personalities, of course, through the thoughts they express to me, through whatever of their actions are revealed to me. But I am denied that deeper understanding of them, which I am sure would come through sight of them, through watching their reactions to various expressed and circumstances, through noting the immediate and fleeting reactions of their eyes and countenance. How much easier, how much more satisfying it is for you who can see to grasp quickly the essential qualities of another person by watching the subtleties of expression, the quiver of a muscle, the flutter of a hand. But does it ever occur to you to use your sight to see the inner nature of a friend or acquaintance? Do not most of you seeing people grasp casually the outward features of a face and let it go at that? on and on, all the different things she describes exactly. And it's amazing how she describes it. She must have been amazingly well read. She's able to describe things she hasn't seen in such detail. And then she starts, she talks about and then the night falls. In the night of that first day of sight, I should not be able to sleep. So full would be my mind of the memories of the day. The next day, the second day of sight, I should arise with the dawn and see the thrilling miracle by which night is transformed into day. I should behold with awe the magnificent panorama of light with which the sun awakens the sleeping earth. And then she goes on, all the things she would want to see. I'm not sure I agree with all her choices, but the idea is incredible. Now I'm reading the end. Perhaps this short outline of how I should spend 3 days of sight does not agree with the program you would set for yourself if you knew that you were about to be stricken blind. I am, however, sure that if you actually faced that fate, your eyes would open to things you had never seen before, storing up memories for the long night ahead. You would use your eyes as never before. Everything you saw would become dear to you. Your eyes would touch and embrace every object that came within your range of vision. Then at last you would really see, and a whole new world of beauty would open itself before you. I, who am blind, can give one hint to those who see, one admonition to those who would make full use of the gift of sight. Use your eyes as if tomorrow you would be stricken blind. And the same method can be applied to other senses. Hear the music of voices, the song of a bird, the mighty strains of an orchestra, as if you would be stricken deaf tomorrow. Touch each object you want to touch, as if tomorrow your tactile sense would fail. Smell the perfume of flowers. Taste with relish each morsel, as if tomorrow you could never smell and taste again. Make the most of every sense. Glory in all the facets of pleasure and beauty which the world reveals to you through the several means of contact which nature provides. But of all the senses, I am sure that sight must be the most delightful. That's the end of her. You have to see the whole thing, all the descriptions. I was very, very, very nostalgic from this. This is just sight she's talking about. And we have to think to ourselves, when we wake up in the morning and we open our eyes, I can see. There are people who can't see. I can see. It's a nest. It's a nest that they say that Darwin wrote, that when he thinks about the human eye, he gets very, very, very frightened. His whole theory seems to be shaken by the existence of the human eye. I can see. That's a nest. I can hear. I have so much to be grateful for. I think I once heard this from the Big Bali Mutzar. I have this in my head from a long time ago. It would be worthwhile sometimes for a person to close his eyes and to imagine that he had nothing. Imagine he was nothing. He was a pauper and he was living in the street. He had nothing. An invalid living in the street. And then you open your eyes and say, oh wow, Hashem gave me a house. Thank you, Hashem. Hashem gave me a car. Thank you, Hashem. A family. Thank you, Hashem. Friends, thank you, Hashem. I can walk straight. I can think. I can verbalize myself. I can feel things. I can taste things. Imagine we would start each day as if we had nothing, which we have nothing when we're sleeping, and open up our eyes, and open up our ears, and open up our mouth, and feel the world. That's the Nes of Chanukah. That's what it's supposed to point out to us. That's why there's 8 days of Chanukah and not seven. She titles her article, 3 Days to See. I think Chanukah is 8 days to see. It's 8 days where every time we light the lift, we have to take the opportunity to thank the Rabbeinu Shalom for every single small detail and every nuance of everything that he's given to us. We're surrounded by Nisim Nifloim. And the author says if we do that, we'll be zeicha to a madrega that's a very, very high level, and that is to be Mekabel El Machos Shemayim Beratzim. We all know we have to be Mekabel, we have to accept the yoke of Hashem. We accept what Hashem has put on us to do. But the ability to accept it out of excitement and anticipation, look what Hashem did to me, I want to be his servant. That's a trick that we could achieve and we could grasp and we can grow from through 8 days of Chanukah.